TNTRadio.com. You are listening to the TNT News Hour. I am your host for the next, let's say about 53 minutes or so, Don Nikoloff. And I never describe my name as the next 53 minutes or so. What is this show about? Well, if you've been listening to the TNT News Hour, either to Don Newsom or myself, Don Nikoloff, you have been hearing news that you will not hear on mainstream television. And I have several areas that I want to go today to discuss some things that are not being reported in the mainstream, and some you are going to be familiar with, especially if you have been doing any modicum of research about the infringements upon our constitutional or civil rights. Now, I understand, and I'm presuming it's this way, basically in principle, throughout the country, that when someone applies for a driver's license, the driver's license gives a person the privilege. The word privilege is what they use in legalese, and so we'll use their word, privilege, to drive a vehicle. Driver's licenses were never intended to be forms of identification. As far as I know, and as far as I can ascertain from what I know, even Social Security numbers are not to be used as identification, except for certain purposes. They really should identify corporate taxable income. We're not talking about private income or what we call income tax. Now, I don't intend really to get into income tax per se, but so important is the secrecy of your Social Security number and preventing fraud that Social Security numbers do not have to appear on a privilege document that permits you to drive a motor vehicle. What the heck would that have to do with who you are? If you show them a picture of who you are and you've gotten it from a state licensed representative, usually it's called the Department of Motor Vehicles or the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, depending on which state you live, they should be able to track whether or not you passed a test, and both a written test and a driving test. And I guess I should add the vision test, because they want to make sure that you can see, that you can drive without glasses, and that if you are impaired in your vision, that you have corrective lenses. This is an issue that's basically been on the books as long as I know, and probably since they created the driver's license. Now, Social Security numbers were never intended to be used as documents for identification. Passports are used as such documents. And as I recall, having a passport and not having a Social Security number on there for the same purpose, that it could not be used internationally to defraud me, the Social Security number did not appear, at least on the readable surface, and I'm talking about the naked eye, to anyone inspecting that passport to reveal my Social Security number. That would likely be the case for you also. Now, at some point in time, and this may be as recently as, so let's say, 10 years ago or so, maybe 12 years, certain states started taking the initiative on their own as you're filling out documentation for renewal of your driver's license. They would request a Social Security number. And most people fill that out, and when the Social Security number appears on your card, on your driver's license, which is usually a plastic card coated with a special protective film, and that's not in all states, but in some states, if your Social Security number appeared, you were stuck with it for the next 4 or 5 or whatever the term of the license renewal happened to be. So anyone looking at your driver's license now could look at your social security number and make a note of that, especially if they were photographing your driver's license. Now keep in mind, driver's licenses are not necessarily legal identification. They identify who you are as a driver, having been tested and given permission or given the privilege to drive. So your social security number is another issue and is to remain secret. Now, where am I going with this? Well, this is a method that those who are in political positions seem to be able to evade. They're able to keep their social security number off of certain documents. People can't trace them, at least until they're dead, and by then it's too late. Depending on whether or not they are a president or were a president or some specially privileged office, they can retain the secrecy of who they are for, let's say, periods of up to 75 years in some cases. Now, sometimes it's 25 years, 30 years, and whatever law they have created to obfuscate certain facts that might come out regarding an assassination or a major scandal or some kind of traitorous act that certainly would have landed the person in jail or even caused them to be executed for treason. So politicians seem to have a way to circumvent the requirement to present the social security number under certain circumstances. And in fact, many of them don't have social security numbers. You can find that certain presidents or certain people in Congress or the Senate, having become deceased, would have social security recognition in the what's called the SSDI, or the death index for the Social Security Administration, and their record would show up. What as a researcher, what I'm finding is that is not an infrequent occurrence, but more a frequent occurrence. And how and where these people were given their social security numbers always seems to follow a pattern. For instance, there are many politicians that for some reason got their social security numbers in the state of New Jersey, a state that has as many as three or four names for the same town. It's as though they created that state for obfuscation of where a person is or their identity. It works very well for spies. It works very well for people in the intelligence community, maybe not necessarily spies, but doing some kind of work where they want their identity to remain secret. It's very frustrating to look for that type of information. Now, it dawned on me that my own driver's license is to be renewed soon. Many of you probably have just done that or have that coming up, maybe in this year. And some of the states are reporting that the North American Union symbol is already on their driver's license, even though it is not a law. It is not legal. It is anti-constitutional or unconstitutional. And yet some people are receiving driver's licenses with that information. Now, since a driver's license shouldn't be identification, and since a social security card should not be identification, simply because it's your connection to the illegal IRS and the illegal Federal Reserve, they shouldn't be used as forms of ID. So how does one get any kind of ID? Well, many states, if not all states, issue state ID cards. For instance, if you are someone that does not qualify for driving, let's say you're blind, or you're deaf and blind, or you have some other disability that prohibits you from driving a car. It doesn't enable you to drive a car, so you wouldn't even apply for a driver's license. How do you go about getting any type of identification? It should not be the social security number. In that case, you might be receiving some sort of disability benefits. Or if if you became disabled because of an accident, a work-related accident, you were going to receive some Social Security disability payments. But that should still be a private issue. That should not be publicized. So we have plenty of legal argument and plenty of logical argument for why one wouldn't want their driver's license publicized or their Social Security number on the driver's license, since it's private information. Why should it be made public? In fact, that's the very method used to steal identities. Now, this comes to the point, and I'm going to read something that came from the StateGazette.com. State to make driver's licenses into real ID despite short funding. Now, the issue here is that they don't have enough money to do this. Driver's licenses were designed to give persons permission to operate vehicles. Now, I dispute that word. They call driving a privilege. So it's to give you the privilege to drive. They're granting the privilege, not the permission. You could have a driver's license. You could have the privilege of driving on a card, and your parents could tell you that you do not have permission to drive the car. There's a difference between the two. In recent decades, they've also become passports to everyday life in the U.S., required for boarding airplanes, cashing checks, entering federal buildings, and more. Driver's licenses will soon take on a new role, fighting terrorism and protecting national security. Now, tell me how my driver's license in my wallet or in my pocket is going to stop terrorism. It doesn't make any sense. So there's the implication that having my driver's license as some form of identification is going to stop terrorism. If that were the case, 9/11 would have never occurred. The change stems from the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. 18 of the 19 terrorists who hijacked airplanes that day used driver's licenses or similar identification to board the doomed planes. Many of those licenses were fraudulently obtained. Okay, now, we have double speak and triple speak and quadruple speak in this one sentence alone. First of all, we didn't have terrorist attacks. That's the name they gave the attacks. Okay, we had several large skyscrapers that fell because they were blown up. They showed holograms of airplanes. No one saw an airplane, although they had plenty of people to go before the media to make such a claim. They found no airplane parts. They disintegrated two 110-story buildings and a 47-story skyscraper. A total of 267 stories of building turned to powder and molten metal. And they're calling those terrorist attacks. Now, they blamed it on 19 terrorists, 9 of whom we know are still alive and living in various parts of the Middle East, very upset that their names are being used, being blamed for something that they did not do. In fact, how can they be alive? How can they have flown the airplanes? Well, there were no airplanes, so they're alive because they were not on any airplanes that crashed into buildings. No buildings suffered damage from airplanes. And I'm speaking about a physical collision of an airplane into a building. Now, who are these Arab hijackers? Quote, Arab hijackers. Dr. Qasem Khalil wrote a book, and he was a guest on my Evident Footprint show a couple of months ago, wrote a book called Wrongly Blamed, and he went to the Middle East and tracked down some of these so-called terrorists. And actually did the investigation tying the Israelis and the shadow government into this whole thing. We had a complete military stand down. The most powerful military in the world couldn't stop 4 American commercial airliners from slamming into buildings. Think about that. Just ask yourself that question. Now, I'm going off on 9/11, but they're using 9/11 as an excuse for making driver's licenses national identification cards when they're merely privileged. They indicate or substantiate that you are privileged to drive a motor vehicle. After studying the tragedy, the 9/11 Commission concluded that minimum standards are needed for state-issued driver's licenses and identity cards. Congress responded by passing the Real ID Act of 2005. This is the Real ID Act. Now, let's say that you are not driving. How are you expected to get a driver's license to become a national ID? Now, let's go into the article here a bit more. Basically, the act requires states to incorporate information and security features into each card, require proof of the identity and U.S. citizenship or legal residency of each applicant. Now, I would ask the question, and I ask this rhetorically, are these politicians whose fictioned genealogies, their fictioned entrance into this country and into our political system, are they required to abide by the same rule? And this will become very evident in a week when my first article comes out about John McCain, the Three Stooges Go to Washington. I've done the genealogical work on these people, and it's very unorthodox genealogy work. I've done the work on Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. You're going to be amazed at what comes out about these three families, these three individuals. Can't even call them families, because families have parents and brothers and sisters and grandparents. I think a mongrel dog has a better lineage. And I'm talking about one that you find out in the ghetto somewhere. Verify the documents presented by each applicant. Again, do they have to abide by the same rules? Are they held to the same standard of accountability? Set security standards for offices issuing licenses and identification cards. How many times have you received a piece of mail from the Department of Motor Vehicles or Bureau of Motor Vehicles with your name spelled wrong? Or the wrong address, or the wrong birth date, or some information. But now they have to set security standards, as if before that didn't matter, that they had the correct spelling of your name, or the correct address, or the correct eye color, or the correct hair color, or height. States are not required to adopt the standards, but residents, now listen to this carefully, again, states are not required to adopt the standards, but residents of non-compliant states must use another form of identification, such as a passport, to board airplanes or enter federal buildings. Now, I suppose then, if you don't have this other identification, then you are not going to be able to enter a federal building, such as a post office. You mean I don't have to stand in line? That's a blessing. The hours in our lifetime that we stand in line in a post office just waiting to buy a stamp can be used to better use. So they're going to hold this over your head somehow that you're not going to be able to go into a federal building. Does that include prisons? If that's the case, then they can't put you in prison either, can they? They can't take you to court. The new standards are to be in place by May 11th, but none of the states are expected to make that goal. All have applied for extensions that push the deadline back to December 31st, 2009. Tennessee Department of Safety spokesperson Laura McPherson said a committee is reviewing the regulations and determining what changes Tennessee needs to make. Persons who apply for a driver's license in Tennessee are already required to show proof that they are U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents. The new requirements, however, will require states to verify the documents, most likely through an interstate communication network. The changes are expected to be expensive. Now, there seems to be more doublespeak there. They're letting illegal aliens into the country, giving them false identification, giving them false IDs, driver's licenses. I've got an email somewhere, someone sent me, where the guy goes into a photo booth. It's I don't know what country this person is from. He appears that, or it appears that he may be from Mexico. And he's got his picture and his girlfriend together on his driver's license. Tell me that that's a real license. And how is it that these are made and people make such mistakes on them? You know, can you see a family picture on your driver's license or your softball team? Oh my goodness. This world is getting insane, but we are required to comply with these federal standards, even though they're giving $10,000 upon the illegal entry of these people. They're given an average of $36,000 of support per person who illegally enters the country. And they say that you have to show that you are either a U.S. citizen or a lawful permanent resident. Now, what is that? What makes one a lawful permanent resident? Is that because they decide that they can have the people that are picking the crops and cleaning the toilets of the roadside rests along the highways? Those people are lawful permanent residents? Is that what they mean? That's what we have going on? The National Governors Association estimated in July that the changes will exceed $11 billion over the next 5 years, including $1 billion in upfront costs merely to create systems and processes necessary to implement the law and prepare to re-enroll all 245 million driver's licenses and identification card holders. This is absolutely ridiculous. This amount of money. There are 300 million people, they say, in the United States, or more. We have to account for all the illegals, I guess. How many times does 300 million go into 11 billion? This is an enormous amount of money. You can build 10 professional sporting complexes, including a baseball stadium and a basketball arena and parking facilities. You can build at least 10 of them, and they're telling us that 300 million people, they need to spend $11 billion upgrading this system. This is ridiculous. The Tennessee General Assembly described the real ID requirements as yet another unfunded federal mandate. No fooling. It sounds like blackmail and extortion, doesn't it? Last June, the legislative body adopted a non-binding resolution against Real ID. A non-binding resolution against Real ID, and Governor Phil Bredesen signed it. The resolution said the mandate to the states to issue what is, in effect, a national identification card appears to be an attempt to commandeer the political machinery of the states and to require them to be agents of the federal government in violation of the principles of federalism contained in the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. That's exactly what I was talking about. I broke it apart in little pieces, and then here we have just a blanket statement from Tennessee. And they passed the law that they're not going to honor the National ID Act, as have some other states. New Hampshire actually issued arrest warrants for Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. They figured out what's going on. Do you think they want to sign the National ID Act or the Real ID Act as part of the compliance between the state of New Hampshire and Washington? I don't think so. It's too early to know how these costs will affect the driver's license fees in Tennessee. Oh, so now there's who's going to pay for it. How is it going to affect the fees? You have to change your license to comply against terrorism, terrorism committed by these ghostly assassins that are still alive in the Middle East, that not only were able to fly the buildings into planes at speeds that even professional pilots say cannot be done. They were able to bring down two 110-story skyscrapers and didn't hit the third 47-story skyscraper, and they tore that building down too. They blew that one up and brought it down in a free fall. They weren't blamed for that. It was just, well, since we're cleaning up, let's get rid of all the work. Hiding the expensive cost of replacing the asbestos in the World Trade Center. That's what it was all about. And they made billions from it. Again, it's too early to know how these costs will affect the driver's license fees in Tennessee. I suppose we can include the other 49 states in that. The answer, McPherson said, will depend on how many federal grants Tennessee may receive. She said the state is in the process of applying for grants. So whatever money out of the $11 billion they can't cover, and of course, they haven't even done the study. Remember, they have to create the systems and the processes, and already they know that it will exceed $11 billion. How do they know that? They haven't done the study. They haven't gotten the $1 billion to do the study to determine what the system is going to be. So how can you say what the cost is going to be when you don't even know what you're going to do? Do they think we're this stupid that we can't see through this? I guess I should do a whole show on evident footprints on this and maybe get this person on my show and ask these questions. Just call them to task. In the meantime, the General Assembly appropriated $1 million in the current 2007-2008 budget for Real ID. McPherson said the Department of Safety plans to spend $123,000 for a contractor to create and document a comprehensive, in-depth business process analysis and information systems needs requirement for a new driver license information system. This contract has not yet been finalized. Now, they just said they need to spend $1 billion to figure out, to create a system and processes necessary to implement the law, but they spend $1 million and allocate, I should say, $1 million toward this issue. And then they're going to spend $123 to have a guy create and document what it's going to take. Why do they need the $1 billion or the $11 billion? They can do it now for $123,000. Again, more doublespeak and triple and quadruple speak. This does not make any sense whatsoever. The plan will dictate how the rest of this year's $1 million is spent. In other words, whose pockets can they line? The safety department is requesting another $26.5 million in the 2008 to 2009 budget proposal. The budget has not yet been finalized. McPherson said funding sources include a non-recurring $6.5 million state general fund appropriation and a non-recurring appropriation of $20 million for estimated excess funds in the state's title and registration system development reserve. Now they're going to title, is this cars or houses or what? Is this all physical property, motor vehicles, boats? What is this? Airplanes? What are they talking about? The $26.5 million request will be used for the complete redesign of the state's current driver license information system, she said. Now, they haven't done the study. They haven't determined how they're going to comply with this, and already they're revamping the system and they know how much money they need to do this. So much doublespeak. Now, here's a comment by Dr. Ron Paul, February 9th of 2005. Mr. Speaker, I rise in strong opposition to House Resolution 418, the Real ID Act. The bill purports to make us safer from terrorists who may sneak into the United States and from other illegal immigrants. While I agree that these issues are of vital importance, this bill will do very little to make us more secure. Isn't that what I said? By the way, I've not even read this letter. I'm hearing it for the first time like you. Maybe you've even heard it before me. It will not address our real vulnerabilities. It will, however, make us much less free. In reality, this bill is a Trojan horse. It pretends to offer desperately needed border control in order to stampede Americans into sacrificing what is uniquely American, our constitutionally protected liberty. Now, you remember I mentioned, you know, I'm sitting on my driver's license. It's in my pocket. It's in my wallet. I mean, you may be sitting on yours. How is that a threat to the security of the United States? He goes on, what is wrong with this bill? The Real ID Act establishes a national ID card by mandating that states include certain minimum identification standards on driver's licenses. It contains no limits on the government's power to impose additional standards. Indeed, it gives authority to the Secretary of Homeland Security to unilaterally add requirements as it sees fit. Supporters claim it is not a national ID because it is voluntary. However, any state that opts out will automatically make non-persons out of its citizens. The citizens of that state will be unable to have any dealings with the federal government because their ID will not be accepted. And as I mentioned before, that may be a blessing in disguise right there. But let's say that maybe for whatever reason you maybe have a pension plan or you have some redress of a grievance or some financial interest that the government is holding back from you. And so that might be in your particular case important that you can go into a federal building. They will not be able to fly or take a train. In essence, in the eyes of the federal government, they will cease to exist. It is absurd to call this voluntary. Isn't that what I said? It's blackmail or it's extortion. Republican Party talking points on this bill, which claim that this is not a national ID card, nevertheless endorse the idea that the federal government should set standards for the issuance of birth certificates and sources of identification, such as driver's licenses. As I understand it, the birth certificate is your real identification. Now, that is with the caveat that it must be a real birth certificate. I've written about George H.W. Bush fudging his birth certificate. He was not born in Milton, Massachusetts. He was born in a small town outside of Leipzig, Germany. And I wrote about that, and that article was in the Idaho Observer over a year ago. Yet, is anyone being called to task on that issue? And I repeat, we have the same issues with the current presidential candidate. Right now, they're talking about us. They're talking about the legal American citizens, people who were born here in this country or entered the country legally, became legally a naturalized citizen through the normal process of taking a civil service examination, being questioned and mentored by a judge who eventually granted you legal citizenship. All right, now he goes on to say, so they admit that they want a national ID, but at the same time pretend that this is not a national ID. The bill establishes a massive, centrally coordinated database of highly personal information about American citizens. At a minimum, their name, date of birth, place of residence, social security number, and physical and possibly other characteristics. What is even more disturbing is that by mandating that states participate in the driver's license agreement, this bill creates a massive database of sensitive information on American citizens that will be shared with Canada and Mexico. Why? Is that because they plan a North American Union? They plan to absolve our sovereignty? And this is not going to be voted upon. This is something that they've already signed documents on. It's just a matter of how long are we going to put up with the charade. This bill could have a chilling effect on the exercise of our constitutionally guaranteed rights. It redefines terrorism in broad new terms that could well include members of firearms rights and anti-abortion groups or other such groups as determined by whoever is in power at the time. I suppose if you're against the extermination of the wild warthog, that you could be considered a terrorist if they want to make you such. There are no prohibitions against including such information in the database as information about a person's exercise of First Amendment rights or about a person's appearance on a registry of firearms owners. This legislation gives authority to the Secretary of Homeland Security to expand required information on driver's licenses, potentially including such biometric information as retina scans, fingerprints, DNA information, and even radio frequency identification, or RFID, radio tracking technology, including such technology as RFID would mean that the federal government, as well as the governments of Canada and Mexico, would know where Americans are at all time of the day and night. Now, I would presume that if they have your retina scan or they have your driver's license with a fingerprint on it, that they can obtain a facsimile of your fingerprint, and they can then accuse you of a crime. They can reproduce a false or replica of your fingerprint and implant it at a murder scene. And you can spend the rest of your life in prison just because they've obtained a fingerprint. Why would I think that? Because they do things like that. That's exactly why I brought up the point. But they do this under the fear of terrorism. They are the terrorists. I remind you, listeners, if you don't know that, it's time to wake up to that. There are no limits on what happens to the database of sensitive information on Americans once it leaves the United States for Canada and Mexico, or perhaps other countries. Who is to stop a corrupt foreign government official from selling or giving this information to human traffickers or even terrorists? Will this uncertainty make us feel safer? Now, I would go on beyond Dr. Paul's words there and say, who is to trust our government? The very reason, the very pretext for such an ID is to control us and to enslave us. It's not about being a sovereign person with the privilege of driving a motor vehicle. That's not at all what this is about now. There are no limits on what happens to the database of sensitive information on Americans once it leaves the United States for Canada and Mexico. I repeat that statement. What will all of this mean for us? When this new program is implemented, every time we are required to show our driver's license, we will, in fact, be showing a national identification card. We will be handing over a card that includes our personal and likely biometric information, information which is connected to a national and international database. H.R. 418 does nothing to solve the growing threat to national security posed by people who are already in the U.S. illegally. Instead, H.R. 418 states what we already know, that certain people here illegally are deportable, but it does nothing to mandate deportation. Although Congress funded an additional 2,000 border guards last year, the administration has announced that it will only ask for an additional 210 guards. Why are we not pursuing these avenues as a way of safeguarding our country? Why are we punishing Americans by taking away their freedoms instead of making life more difficult for those who would enter our country illegally? Well, you see, you don't make money that way, and you can't create fear, and you can't take away the sovereign rights of the people that are legally and rightfully here, particularly those born here. H.R. 418 does what legislation restricting firearm ownership does. It punishes law-abiding citizens. Criminals will ignore it. H.R. 418 offers us a false sense of greater security at the cost of taking a gigantic step toward making America a police state. I urge my colleagues to vote no on the Real ID Act of 2005. Now, on May 9th of 2005, he went on to talk about that some more. You can Google the Real ID Act and come up with these very things yourself. Now, in addition to that, there is the ruse that the events of 9/11 were created by terrorists. They darn well know who created 9/11. They were very quick to dispose of all of the debris, to have it shipped off to secret airport hangars, and then on to different parts of the world. They made the claim that that they built a ship from the scrap metal from 9/11. Now, that might be a possibility, but I don't think you could build a whole ship with that. Much of the metal was turned to molten steel and combined with all the elements of human bodies and all the contents of the buildings, including the very concrete, which turned to powder. All of this stuff was metamorphosized or blended into a mixture, a sadistic mixture that burned for months after 9/11. And they're making claims that they built a ship, launched a ship built from that metal, that steel. And I wouldn't be surprised if the metal was given to China so they can make automobiles with it. And someone's driving in a car now that's got a piece of the World Trade Center in it. Oh, the insanity of this world. Okay, now, they are pushing, it appears, for a war with Iran. And, of course, Israel is involved in it. And there's a lot of disinformation coming from the troops that are returning. It's come from several generals that have left Iran, usually under force because they're not complying with the sadistic orders they're being given. Now, here's a message called the quote of the day, and then there's a little piece that comes along with it. The means of defense against foreign danger historically have been the instruments of tyranny at home. James Madison. The subject, summertime war with Iran. Is another war brewing, this time with Iran? The administration claims Iranian-backed Shia militias are attacking U.S. troops in Iraq. Iran denies its involvement. Other reports say that Sunnis have been responsible for two-thirds of the attacks in Iraq. It's also important to note that Al-Qaeda is a Sunni group, not Shia. So who is responsible for most of the killing? Is it really the Shia mullahs in Iran? Now, let me point out that this statement about Al-Qaeda being a Sunni group is only true if Al-Qaeda and the Sunnis are both working for the CIA. We know that the CIA created Al-Qaeda, and they created Al-Qaeda's boogeyman leader, Osama bin Laden, otherwise known as Tim Osman. I go on to read, these Sunni-Shia distinctions confuse John McCain, Bill O'Reilly, and millions of Americans. General David Petraeus played on this ignorance in testimony to Congress last month. He blamed Iran's support of Shia militias for most of the remaining problems in Iraq, he said. Now, I might point out that I got to hear a Lieutenant General Sanchez, who wrote a book about his several years in Iraq. In fact, he was the commander of the forces there for a time, and he's painting a totally different picture about who knew what and who's behind what and what's really going on there. It seems that those of us with a little bit of intuition in other parts of the globe are picking up the same thing. I found that Mr. Sanchez, retired now from the military, had some very poignant comments to make about what is actually going on there. It's not the picture that the mainstream media is painting. In fact, the C-SPAN interviewer, and this was on this morning's C-SPAN, on the live portion where they take calls, was having great difficulty in trying to spin what Lieutenant General Sanchez was saying, and he was referring particularly to the things he had written in his book. And they do this by saying things like, "Oh, are you saying that the government is behind this? Are you saying that the government would do something like this?" They ask these leading questions that are intended to make anyone's factual statements sound preposterous. Are you saying that our government would do this? Now, in this article, and this is the Downsizer Dispatch, by the way, Iran has fueled the violence. With the Iraqi security forces, we have also focused on the special groups. These elements are funded, trained, armed, and directed by Iran's Quds force. It is clearly in our national interest to resist Iranian encroachment. Sounds like spin to me. Petraeus's rhetorical performance earned him a promotion from military boss in Iraq to chief of central command. His military responsibility now includes virtually the entire Middle East, including Iran. Now, why is this commander now responsible for Iran? I mean, have we started a war with them? Have we taken over Iran? But he's been given the responsibility of Iran along with the rest of the Middle East. Again, listen to the verbiage that's used here. Listen to how they're using words to create the image that, okay, he's such a great general, now he's been given this daunting task to fight the Sunnis. They foment the wars, just like they fomented one with Lebanon not too long ago. You had these rockets flying from Lebanon to Israel and back, and it was quite embarrassing to Israel because the Lebanese were actually doing more damage to Israel than Israel was to the Lebanese. And we know that Israel has nuclear weapons, and it's not because they have nuclear capability, it's merely because we're giving them the weapons, despite what we're told. Is this promotion another sign that President Bush wants to attack Iran before he leaves office? Andrew Cockburn reports, quote, "The administration faced a serious obstacle to action against Iran in the form of CENTCOM commander Admiral William Fallon, who made no secret of his contempt for official determination to take us to war. In a widely publicized incident last January, Iranian boat patrols approached a U.S. ship in what the Pentagon described as a taunting manner. According to CENTCOM staff officers, the American commander on the spot was about to open fire. At that point, the U.S. was close to war. He desisted only when Fallon personally and explicitly ordered him not to shoot. The White House, according to the staff officers, was absolutely furious with Fallon for defusing the incident." There are other signs of a pending war with Iran. Headlines and news clips over the past month tell the story. Here's a partial list, and I'm just going down the list, which are bullet-pointed here. I've not researched these, so I'm trusting the accuracy of this information. Diplomats. Iran assembling centrifuges. The New York Times, April 3, 2008. Iran and Al-Qaeda among greatest threats to U.S. Bush. The New York Times, April 10, 2008. Cheney on the warpath again by Dan Frumkin, WashingtonPost.com, April 11, 2008. The vice president portrayed Iran as apocalyptic zealots who yearn for a nuclear conflagration. Now, speaking of nuclear events, it's pretty much been determined that Dick Cheney is behind the missing nuke that flew from Minot Air Force Base to Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana a few months ago. That came out by some very concerned soldiers that thought that there might be a mole inside the military stealing nuclear weapons. What for? To be dropped on the United States, to be given to Israel, or to be dropped on Iran? They have access to nuclear weapons, so they didn't need to steal them. But isn't it funny that they're wondering, they're asking the rhetorical question, is Dick Cheney on the warpath again after this incident? No mention of this incident, by the way. Hawkish engagement needed with Iran by Michael O'Hanlon, Brookings Institution, a call for military action. Here we have a Washington, D.C. think tank, much like the Project for New American Century or the Council on Foreign Relations or any of these groups that usually have as front men the journalists such as William Kristol, the Weekly Standard editor who happened to be on the Project for a New American Century. Where do we get these fair and balanced journalists that appear on Fox News to appear as consultants that we need a new Reichstag fire, which was the purpose of 9/11, to move us towards a new world order, to move us toward martial law? Hamas are Iran's proxy warriors. Rice, American Free Press, April 30th, 2008. CIA director says Iran wants to kill Americans in Iraq. Associated Press, April 30th, 2008. Now, my recommendation on that one, without even reading the article, would be if you're afraid they're going to kill Americans in Iraq, get out of Iraq. Get your butt out of there if you're worried about being killed. But the evidence isn't limited to heated rhetoric and hand-wringing. The U.S. government has also taken physical steps to prepare for war. Just last week, CBS News reported that the Pentagon ordered military commanders to develop new options for attacking Iran. A second aircraft carrier has also arrived in the Persian Gulf, and a Marine amphibious force was allegedly sent there Sunday. Well, the article goes on a bit more to describe the warmongering that's also going on with our presidential candidates and the influence that this has on the fictitious, orchestrated, fraudulent, phony oil prices. They're talking about now about making clothes out of corn. They're talking about making ethanol from corn, taking the food away from the corn. This is pure insanity. Unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. I hope you enjoyed or found today's TNT News Hour enlightening. We are out of time. Special thanks to Don Newsom for doing the sound on this show as well as making this show possible and for inviting me as your weekly Wednesday afternoon TNT News Hour guest or host, I should say. I'm your guest, you're my guest, I'm your host, whatever. We're in this together, though, and I want to wish you an excellent day, excellent week. Be sure to tune in to Don Newsom's version of this show. And in the meantime, join me on Evident Footprints tonight, where my special guest again will be Mr. Tom James, the founder of HempUSA.org. In the meantime, peace, love, and light. And I'll see you all tonight. Bye.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.